Today's reading is taken from Judges chapter 13, verses 1 to 8, and verses 24 to 25, and then the whole of chapter 14. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. A certain man of Zorah, named Manoah, from the clan of the Danites, had a wife who was sterile and remained childless. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, "You are sterile and childless, but you are going to conceive and have a son. Now see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink, and that you do not eat anything unclean, because you will conceive and give birth to a son. No razor may be used on his head, because the boy is to be a Nazarite, set apart to God from birth, and he will begin the deliverance of Israel from the hands of the Philistines." Then the woman went to her husband and told him, "A man of God came to me. He looked like an angel of God, very awesome. I didn't ask him where he came from, and he didn't tell me his name. But he said to me, 'You will conceive and give birth to a son. Now then, drink no wine or other fermented drink, and do not eat anything unclean, because the boy will be a Nazarite of God from birth until the day of his death.'" Then Manoah prayed to the Lord, "O Lord, I beg you, let the man of God you sent to us come again to teach us how to bring up the boy who is to be born." So this is verse 24. The woman gave birth to a boy and named him Samson. He grew and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him while he was in Mahaneh Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol. Judges chapter 14. Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, "I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife." His father and mother replied, "Isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife?" But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me. She's the right one for me." His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel. Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring toward him. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power, so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands, as he might have torn a young goat. But he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with a woman, and he liked her. Sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass. In it was a swarm of bees and some honey, which he scooped out with his hands and ate as he went along. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they too ate it. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. Now his father went down to see the woman, and Samson made a feast there, as was customary for bridegrooms. When he appeared, he was given 30 companions. "Let me tell you a riddle," Samson said to them. "If you can give me the answer within the 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. If you cannot tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes." "Tell us your riddle," they said. "Let's hear it." He replied, "Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet." For 3 days, they could not give the answer. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, "Coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death. Did you invite us here to rob us?" Then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing, "You hate me. You don't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer. I haven't even explained it to my father or my mother," he replied. "So why should I explain it to you?" She cried the whole 7 days of the feast. So on the seventh day, he finally told her, because she continued to press him. She in turn explained the riddle to her people. Before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town said to him, "What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion?" Samson said to them, "If you had not ploughed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle." Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power. He went down to Ashkelon, struck down 30 of their men, stripped them of their belongings, and gave their clothes to those who had explained the riddle. Burning with anger, he went up to his father's house. And Samson's wife was given to the friend who had attended him at his wedding.
Well, good morning once again to everyone on the interwebs. Today, I have the distinct pleasure of preaching on one of the great heroes of the Old Testament, the legendary Samson. I remember being fascinated as a young pup when I heard about him in Sunday school. I pictured a big, muscly giant, something like the giant from the Jack and the Beanstalk story. I even wondered if Samson was as strong as my dad. I, like many other children at the tender age of 5, truly believed that my dad was the strongest man in the world. In the end, it was my big brother, who was 8 years old at the time, and far wiser than I, who set me straight. He told me, to my shock, that Dad actually wasn't the strongest man in the world, and that Mr. T and Hulk Hogan were actually the strongest men in the world. He did, however, maintain that Dad was the strongest man in Australia, which I was quite relieved to hear. Although those are the musings of a small boy, I ask you, friends, if you heard the story when you were growing up, did you have a similar understanding of Samson? Before we go any further, to best understand the story, we may need to unravel a couple of knots that may exist in our minds about the story. Firstly, even today as an adult, when I think of Samson, I think of a mighty man, like a wrestler or a bodybuilder. I think of someone like the legendary Nathan Jones. For those of you who are unfamiliar with that name, I will briefly tell you about it. Jones is a movie star and a bodybuilder and a professional wrestler. He stands at 2.1 metres tall, or 6'11" in the old money, and weighs a whopping 145 kilos. Prior to his career in the entertainment industry, he was a Brisbane boy and found himself on the wrong side of the law. In the 1980s, he even did some time in the Brisbane's notorious Boggo Road jail and had the nickname the Colossus of Boggo Road. I've personally spoken to a number of prison guards and police officers who had dealings with Jones back in the 80s, and the stories of his strength are legendary. On one occasion, when Jones was enraged, he ripped a metal desk off its bolts in the remand section of the jail. And on another occasion, when upset, he bent the top of his metal cell door over. And when a deputy governor spoke to him and told him that he would be charged for the damage done to the door, he got up and insisted that it was not necessary to charge him, and he bent the door back into shape again. During a legendary confrontation with the prison guards in an exercise yard on one occasion, Jones picked up one of the deputy governors, who was talking to him at the time, and threw him clear across the yard. All the other guards present jumped on Jones and got walked around on his back until enough of the guards entered the yard and managed to overpower him and bring him down. And let me assure you that the Boggo Road guards were not wimps or pipsqueaks either. They were very tough men. So friends, when we think of Samson, we must understand that there is no indication in the Bible that he was anything like Nathan Jones. As we progress through the story of Samson, we will see that his strength came from God. And when you picture Samson in the story, it is best not to project Nathan Jones or Andre the Giant into it. Rather, picture an average-sized and rather hairy Jewish chap instead. Secondly, we need to look at the Philistines in depth to properly frame the story of Samson. The Philistines were not a nation of care bears who were picked on by mean old Samson. Now, the image on the screen is not an accurate representation of some local Philistines walking down the main street of Gath. They were actually a very aggressive bunch. Historical research indicates that the Philistines who lived during the time of the Judges were actually descended from a tribe of sea peoples. most likely from the region of Crete. And as a side note, if they were from the region of Crete, then Titus 1:12 has an even deeper meaning for us. Now, according to ancient Egyptian history, around the 12th century BC, the Philistines originally sailed to Egypt and tried to conquer it. However, the Egyptians proved to be too powerful for them, and they were defeated by Pharaoh Ramses III and sent northeast to Canaan, where they set up a nation on the coast. We also know that the Philistines worshipped a grain god named Dagon. We can really see how formidable the Philistines were when we read Exodus 13:17. It says, "When Pharaoh let the people go," that's the Israelites, "God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter, for God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt." When we read further through the Old Testament, we see the Philistines were actually so strong as a nation that the Israelites couldn't conquer them during Joshua and the reign of the judges. Israel didn't end up defeating and subjugating the Philistines until the reigns of Kings David and Solomon. We also see that the Philistines weren't fully removed from the Promised Land until the time when the Babylonians invaded the Kingdom of Judah around about 590 BC, and they either wiped out or exiled the Philistines. My point is, the Philistines were real baddies. So to best understand Samson and his reign as a judge, I'm going to take you through a story from a unique angle by focusing on some of the important scenes of Samson's life. So let's dive in. Scene 1 begins in chapter 14, verse 1, with a conversation between Samson and his mum and dad. When I read this, I think that our hero may have been a tad on the impulsive side. By our modern sensibilities, this conversation between his parents and Samson seems rather surreal. Basically, this was the conversation. "Hey, mum and dad, I went out today and I saw this chick I want to marry." "Well, gee, son, are you sure you don't want to marry one of your own cousins or fellow Israelites instead?" "No, mum and dad, this chick is hot. I want her. Go get her for me." After this conversation, we see that Samson takes his parents down to Timnah, presumably to meet the soon-to-be blushing bride. We read of a battle between Samson and a lion in verse 6. It says, "The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him, so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands, as he might have torn a young goat. But he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done." Verses 8 and 9 tell us of a rather unsanitary meal of honey that Samson collects from the rotting carcass of the lion. I, like many of you listening today, are fairly well-travelled people. And on my travels out west, I have seen the odd animal carcass on the ground. I can assure you that if I was to see some honey growing in the carcass of an unfortunate kangaroo, my first instinct is not to go ahead, tuck a napkin into my shirt, and grab a knife and fork and hoe in. Strangely, Samson consumes the honey and then even gives some to his parents. To add to the strangeness of Samson's actions, he then decides to pose a very vague riddle about his delicious meal to the Philistines at his wedding feast. In verses 12 to 14 it says, "Let me tell you a riddle," Samson said to them. "If you can give me the answer within 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. If you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes." "Tell us your riddle," they said. "Let's hear it." He replied, "Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet." For 3 days, they could not give the answer. And naturally, after the Philistines couldn't figure out this rather challenging brain teaser, we read of a deception by his new wife and the Philistines to gain the answer. Of course, our hero is upset by this deception, and in verse 19 tells them of his pleasure in no uncertain terms, and uses a rather interesting descriptor for his new wife. Samson then fulfills his promise of 30 garments in a rather extreme way. In verses 19 and 20 it says, "Then the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. He went down to Ashkelon, struck down 30 of their men, stripped them of everything, and gave their clothes to those who had explained the riddle. Burning with anger, he returned to his father's home. and Samson's wife was given to one of the companions who had attended him at the feast. Friends, when we think of Samson's fairly rash actions here, we must ask ourselves, is this the sort of behaviour expected of a judge of Israel who was appointed by God? We now jump to scene two and read of a situation worthy of the Jerry Springer show. In chapter 15, we see how Samson, who is unaware of his wife's new marital arrangement, grabs a goat and goes back to pay her a visit in her bedroom. We read of a head-spinning conversation between Samson and his former father-in-law. Here's basically how it went. Here's the goat for you guys. Now I'm off to visit my wife in her bedroom. Whoa there, hold up, Samson. I thought you hated her, so I gave her to this other chap who was at your wedding. Here, take my younger, even hotter daughter instead. This time I have a reason to stick it to you. You guys are so going to get it. We then read in verses 4 to 6 of Samson's vengeance. It says, so he went out and caught 300 foxes, and he tied them tail to tail in pairs. He then fastened a torch to every pair of tails, lit the torches, and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. He burned up the shocks and the standing grain, together with the vineyards and the olive groves. Friends, when I read this, I am in awe of Samson's patience and dedication. I also have many questions on how he managed to pull off this magnificent feat. Firstly, where did he get 300 foxes from? Surely with big ears like that, they would have heard him coming and run off. Or perhaps he raided some local fox farm. Secondly, where did he find 150 torches? Thirdly, where did he store the 300 foxes whilst he was preparing the torches? Did he pay some guy to use his barn? Fourthly, was he covered in scratches and bites after he was finished? Or did he borrow some personal protective equipment from a local blacksmith? Finally, and most importantly, how did he come up with such an elaborate idea for revenge? Samson had an amazing mind for revenge. This is not the sort of man you want to mess with, methinks. Again, these events should make us ask, is this the behaviour of what we would expect from our God-appointed judge of Israel? We then see in the following verses that the Philistines are rather upset about this whole situation and end up killing Samson's ex-wife and father-in-law. They then foolishly try and punish Samson for his part in the destruction of their crops. After intimidating the Israelites into arresting Samson, the Philistines then try to take custody of Samson from the Israelites. We read what happens in verses 14 and 15. It says, as he, that's Samson, approached Lehi, the Philistines came towards him shouting. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. The ropes on his arms became like charred flax, and the bindings dropped from his hands. Finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it and struck down 1,000 men. Again, we see Samson's might in action. And again, I'm in awe of Samson's actions here, particularly how he fought with the donkey's jawbone. If only he had access to some kind of spear-like long pole-type implement with a sharp tip, or perhaps some double-edged blade-like, sword-like weapon that Samson could have used to fight the Philistines. I imagine he was swinging that jawbone around and would have been kicking swords and spears out of the way throughout the whole battle. We now move on to scene three. In chapter 16, we read more of Samson's impulsiveness. We read of Samson visiting Gaza and spending the night with a prostitute. And once the people of Gaza realise who's in the local cat house, they decide to set up an ambush for him in the morning. In verse 3, we read, but Samson lay there only till the middle of the night. Then he got up, took hold of the doors of the city gate, together with the two posts, and tore them loose, bar and all. He lifted them to his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. Once again, I am in awe of Samson's beautiful mind. Instead of just sneaking out of Gaza undetected, he decides to rip the city gates off the wall and carry them off. Can you imagine the laughter amongst the Israelites after hearing of Samson's antics? I wonder if they were wiping tears from their eyes from the laughter. Imagine their conversations. Remember the time when Samson set 300 foxes loose in the Philistine grain fields? What about the time he ripped the Gaza city gates off the wall? Friends, as we continue to progress through the story, I once again ask, is this the sort of behaviour that we would expect from a judge of Israel appointed by God? Friends, it's sadly in this scene that we learn of Samson's undoing as well. There's a saying that men have a certain type of woman they're attracted to. It seems that Samson's type was the turbulent Philistine woman. In my 20-year career in public hospitals, I spent more than 5 years working in the emergency departments, and I've seen the fruits of some pretty messed up relationships. Things that would make your hair curl if I told you the stories. I can confidently say that Samson and Delilah are right up there with them. In verse 4, we learn of Samson's relationship with Delilah. We see how she worked with the Philistine rulers to learn the secret of Samson's strength. After multiple lies from Samson and betrayals at Delilah's hands, for some strange reason, Samson gives in and tells her his secret. The secret of his strength coming from his long hair. In verses 18 and 19, we see the results of his final betrayal by Delilah. It says, when Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines. Come back once more, he has told me everything. So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. After putting him to sleep on her lap, she called for someone to shave off the 7 braids of his hair, and she began to subdue him, and his strength left him. Can you imagine how nervous the chap cutting Samson's hair would have been whilst giving this haircut? I wonder how much his hand would have wanted to shake as he held those scissors. Of course, from the final betrayal, we see Samson overcome by the Philistines and learn that he loses his eyes and is put to work in prison. However, this is not the end of the story for Samson. In the final hours of Samson's life, we see that the Philistines were so pleased with finally capturing and subduing him that they decide to hold a big celebration for their god Dagon in his temple. They decide to bring in Samson for some entertainment and make him stand near the pillars of the temple. One final time, we see Samson's beautiful mind in action in the final request he makes to his servant. He basically says, hey servant, do me a favour and find 2 load-bearing pillars so I can stretch my arms out on them, to which the servant happily obliges. After reading this, I can think of 2 important take-home lessons for the Philistines. Firstly, get a structural engineer to inspect your buildings, as you probably shouldn't have 2 load-bearing pillars so close together. And of course, secondly, employ smarter servants. We read of Samson's end in verses 28 to 30. It says, then Samson prayed to the Lord, Sovereign Lord, remember me. Please God, strengthen me once more, and let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my 2 eyes. Then Samson reached towards the 2 central pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them, his right hand on the one and left hand on the other. Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. Then he pushed with all his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than when he lived. Now that the story is told, we have to figure out what to make of the life of this extraordinary man. To do this, we must understand some important things about Samson and the nation of Israel during his reign. As you may recall from the earlier judges, there was a cycle that Israel went through. Israel sins, they cry out, God hears their cries and raises a judge to save them. The pattern is repeated over and over in the book of Judges. However, by the time we get to Samson, there's no record of Israel crying out to God for help. Instead, from Judges 13:1, we see that Israel sins, and without a cry for help, God sends them a judge to deliver them. So when we compare Samson to the other judges that came before him, there is a song from Sesame Street that comes to my mind. It goes, one of these things is not like the others. One of these things doesn't belong. Unlike the other judges who fought to rid Israel of its enemies, Samson during his reign didn't try conquering or remaining separate from the Philistines. Instead, he constantly tried to join with them through partying and through relationships with Philistine women. We are left asking, was this guy really a judge? Or was he just an impulsive man with a taste for turbulent women? How is this guy anything like the legendary Othniel or Gideon? When we look more closely at the story, we can see that he really was a true judge of Israel. Although Samson was very impulsive and failed to follow God's instructions for his life, we see that many of Samson's actions were ordained by God. You will recall in the story how at each feat of strength it says, "And the Spirit of God came powerfully upon Samson." All these miraculous feats of strength were from God. They were meant to be a judgment upon the Philistines for their wickedness against Israel. We also see through the story a connection between Samson's hair and his strength. We must understand that it was not his hair that made him strong. The hair was a symbol of his strength and his covenant with God. By revealing his secret to Delilah, he demonstrates his choice of her over God. His haircut was the demonstration of his rejection and separation from God, causing him to lose his strength. We also see from the story of Samson that the nation of Israel seems to have just given up and accepted their sinfulness and oppression at the hand of the Philistines. In Israel's extreme level of moral and spiritual decay, we see that God uses an extreme way of combating that through the impulsive actions of Samson. We see that God uses Samson's foolish desires to mix with the Philistines as a way to carry out his judgments on them. It is through this mixing that Samson is placed in the middle of the Philistines' affairs and gets right up in their faces and literally brings judgment down upon them in their midst. Of course, from the rest of the Old Testament, we see the cycle of decay in the nation of Israel continues throughout their history. We see over and over that no human ruler can deliver God's people from their sinfulness. After each cycle, the situation just becomes worse and worse. It is not until many centuries later in the New Testament that true and lasting deliverance comes for God's people, a deliverance that comes through the ultimate judge and ruler, Jesus Christ. It is Christ on the cross who brings the ultimate deliverance from the world's cycle of sin. It is Christ, the Son of God, who brings a lasting deliverance where Samson and all the other judges could not. In Luke 4:18 to 19, Christ himself testifies to his role in the deliverance of God's people. He says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and the recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour." In John 3:16 to 17, Christ tells us, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him." Friends, Christ is the ultimate judge and deliverer of God's people. Christ was the strongest man of all, and he chose not to use his strength to deliver God's people. Instead, he surrendered his life on the cross in obedience to God to bring about our freedom from sin. I ask you, friends, in your lives, are you struggling with sins like Samson and Israel struggled with? When we look back over Samson's life, we see that his troubles and his eventual downfall involved his foolish and sinful involvement with Philistine women. Samson's ultimate undoing was his choosing Delilah over God. I challenge both males and females listening today, are there Delilahs in your lives? Do you struggle with the temptation out of a Delilah in your workplace? Or do you struggle with a digital Delilah? Are you being Christ-like in your activity on the internet? Friends, both men and women in the Christian church today face a significant struggle with pornography, and it is most often a hidden struggle that causes great grief and shame to the believers. To those of you who are struggling with your own digital Delilahs, I encourage you to pray for deliverance from your sin. I encourage you to seek out a Christ-like and trustworthy person of your own gender to be accountable to. Someone who can help you and support you as you seek to shine God's light and love on this dark and hidden sin. Friends, by doing this, you are doing what Samson failed to do. You are choosing to love God more than you love your own Delilahs. To those of you who don't know Christ, I urge you to put your faith in him and to receive deliverance from your sins. To those of you who know Christ, I encourage you to press in closer to him and to live your lives in obedience to the one who delivered you from your bondage. This is the word of the Lord.